You are listening to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church.
Well, this morning as we begin in Psalm 91, I wanted to start with a question. What are you afraid of? I think we can say we're all afraid of something. There's something at least we can all point to that we would say, yeah, that's not something that I'm about. That's something that makes me uncomfortable. That's something that takes me out of the comfort zone where I feel out of control. And I feel like it's not my element. It's not where I'm at home. I'm at peace. I need to either get out of that place or move away from that thing that's happening because it terrifies me. If you ask children what they're afraid of, and there are some children here, yes, teens, if you're under 18, you are still a child. You're still under your parents' roof. But any child, right, young, older, for the most part, their fears are tangible. They're things that are related to people or animals or creatures. Some examples might include monsters, bugs, dogs, snakes, the school bully, right? Might depend on the gender, too. Boys are definitely afraid of different things than girls would be afraid of. And again, these are related to people, right? Tangible things, animals, creatures. But children can also have fear of unexpected and potentially dangerous circumstances, right? Things that, again, they feel like they're out of their control. That can include lying awake in the dark, riding a bike, getting lost, flying in an airplane. The fear factor in those cases is not so much a person or a thing, but it is an event or an experience that they're not prepared for, that they don't like. If you ask adults, on the other hand, what they're afraid of, it's more the second half of that tend to describe their fears. Adults can have tangible fears, right? Adults can be just as scared of snakes, for example, or bugs as kids are. But the kinds of insecurities and fears that we deal with as adults tend to be less tangible, but they're still real, aren't they? They're still things that we're not about, that take us out of our element. And that can include a wide variety of things. It can include things like rising prices, gas or otherwise. It can include a loss of work. It can include neighborhood safety, marital conflict, your child's future. These are the kinds of things that keep us up at night, don't they? We all have fears. It's part of being human, mortal, and finite. There's no way around that. Even if we have grown out of our childhood fears, there are probably still a few things that inspire fear in us. Usually these might involve an ill-timed event or malicious people that can potentially do us harm or potentially do our family harm. There's always something out there that can render physical, mental, and emotional turmoil, distress, or damage to you. And the world, of course, knows how to play up these fears. They know the things that people are afraid of, and so what do? They find ways to exacerbate it, to make it seem worse than it is. The media especially will know how to take a story or a headline and craft it in such a carefully worded way that the general public might be more afraid of something than it otherwise should be. Sometimes they will give appropriate attention to a genuine danger, such as a natural disaster, for example, if a hurricane was coming, for example. But often, it is to their advantage that people are more scared, more afraid than they should be. Now, if you have a relationship with God, you should know, friend, that that relationship should inform how you approach your fears, whatever they might be. Your relationship with God matters a whole lot. It is directly connected to the fears and insecurities that you have. Whether you struggle with the fears that are ginned up by the world, by the people around you, or whether they are fears of your own making, you can find your rest in the Lord. He's the greatest remedy for your fear. Today we're going to look at a psalm that teaches us this important truth. And that is this from Psalm 91. As God's people, we should find our security in Him. Men in the back, can we progress the slides? Thank you. As God's people, we should find our security in Him. There is no fear or insecurity that should overwhelm you and impact you so deeply that you can't thrive in your walk with God. If your fears are keeping you back from having a dynamic, close-knit relationship with Jesus, there's something wrong. Those fears are taking over your life. Psalm 91, I think, helps us to think rightly about our God so that we can think rightly about our fears. Let's first get an introduction to the psalm. This psalm is very familiar to people in the church, right? Especially, I think, verse 1. Even if you don't know the rest of the psalm or you're not familiar with the rest of the psalm, you've probably at least heard of verse 1. Maybe you've seen it on some kind of home decoration at Michael's or Hobby Lobby or something. Dwelling in the secret place, abiding under the shadow of the Almighty. I mean, how more picturesque can you get of the safety, the hearth, the warmth you feel of being in God's presence, right? Finding security there. Hard to think of another text that conveys this sense of peace and rest and security. Reading the rest of the psalm, the psalmist's words reinforce these images in our minds and instill confidence in us that our God is watching over his people. Now, speaking of the psalmist, you may realize that we don't know who he is. And you can know that because in the beginning of Psalm 91, typically there is some kind of a tagline or a subheading that will give you some information about either who the psalmist is, who wrote the psalm. It can tell you the occasion for the psalm. It can tell you what instruments you should use when you play this song or when it's used in worship. But Psalm 91 has none of that. Psalm 91 doesn't have a tagline. So we don't really know for sure. There are many who've tried to guess possibly who this person is that wrote it. On the one hand, you read the psalm and you can't help but think of the familiar words of the shepherd, David, who of course wrote much of the book of Psalms. Now we know David was a man who knew what it was like to face danger on a regular basis. He ran from his enemies years before he ever became king, right? It took a long time for him to reach that point. Many of the Psalms portray his deep emotional turmoil, the wrestling within himself, as he tried to reconcile his difficult human circumstances with the great plan that God had for his life, for him to become the king of Israel. Psalm 91, I think, conveys some of those powerful truths about how God's people can find their shelter, their safety in his protection. On the other hand, this psalm also shares some similar themes with the psalms that come before and after it. You might think, wait, why does the psalms before and after have anything to do with it? Well, if you look at Psalm 92, for example, right, the psalm directly following this one, you see that the psalmist speaks of God as the Most High. Well, that's a name for God that comes up in Psalm 91. And the idea of being high, being in a place that is far above the fray, far above danger, that's a theme that comes up a lot in Psalm 91. We also know from in Psalm 90, which is the psalm before, right? Moses wrote that psalm, and it begins with these words, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. That's interesting because dwelling place also happens to come up in Psalm 91. Now, again, we don't know for sure that David wrote it. We don't know for sure that Moses wrote Psalm 91. It's just interesting where it's located in this book. And friends, if you ever thought that the book of Psalms was ordered or organized haphazardly, think again, because it was organized intentionally. In fact, if you looked at our songbooks, like the Majesty Songbook we've used before, there are typically groups of songs that are put together because they share a common theme. You'll notice that the Christmas carols we sing aren't scattered all over the Majesty book. They're in one place. You can generally find them in one location in the book. Kind of similar idea here. There are psalms that share similar themes and ideas, and they're grouped together. And I think that might be what's going on here in Psalm 91. It was an intentional placement. The way that this psalm is organized is also intentional, friends. And if we can move to the next slide, it can be outlined by the different voices that are used throughout the psalm. What do I mean by the voice? Well, if you're familiar with poetry, I'm going to take you to your English class back in high school. If you're familiar with the voice of a poem or a song, it's talking about the person who's speaking, right? Obviously, there's one writer, or maybe there is a collaboration of writers, but there's a voice. There's someone who's talking, communicating through the poem, through the song. In verses 1 to 13 of this psalm, it's the voice of the psalmist. The writer is talking directly to us, the audience, and especially in the beginning of the song, in the beginning of the psalm, he's communicating and expressing his strong reliance on the Lord as a refuge from danger. And then, of course, he directly addresses you and I, and he says, hey, if you trust the Lord and his refuge and security like I do, here's the benefits of it. Here are the ways that you are blessed and that you are protected from danger. But then in verses 14 to 16, something else happens. Someone else speaks. Do you notice that? Starting in verse 14 of this psalm, because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. Wait, who's talking there? Because it's not the psalmist. The psalmist isn't saying, set your love on me and I'll answer your prayer. No, God is speaking through the psalmist at this point. So it's a different voice. It's a different person talking at that point. In this part of the psalm, God is using the songwriter to directly address his people. And he wants us to know from his own mouth that when you trust me in these ways, when you rely upon me as a shelter from the storm, he protects you from danger just as he promised. Now, the first line of the psalm especially points us to this powerful divine reality that our God protects his people from danger. When we face fearful or dangerous circumstances, our God stands ready by our side to provide us a haven, a shelter. He's not somewhere distant where we can't reach him. He's not apathetic to the things that you're going through. Instead, as Psalm 46 puts it, God is a very present help in trouble. He is very present with you. Now, the Lord describes this protection in a couple of very important ways. First, notice with me the images that the psalmist uses to convey this protection. So, starting in the opening lines, right? He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Now, dwelling in a secret place, that sounds like code for something, but it's not. A secret place is just a hiding place or a covering. That's what it's talking about. And then similar idea with shadow of the Almighty, right? So resting in the Lord's hiding place, his covering, that's akin to being underneath his shadow. Both of these are conveying a sense of protection, a sense of safety. So when danger comes, we can hide in the Lord. That's what the psalmist is saying. He's going to cover you and hide you from it. You read further, and the psalmist reinforces the Lord's guardianship of his people with military imagery. And boy, if you wanted to convey a sense of power and might, it would be with military imagery. It would be with soldiers and battles and armies. In this case, the psalmist refers to the Lord as his what? Refuge and fortress. Boy, when I think of a fortress, I think of a stone castle high above a vast open landscape. And even as the enemy army is approaching this large fortification, the people inside the castle walls know nothing's getting through this. We're totally safe. If I'm a soldier and I'm imagining myself, if I'm a knight behind those walls, I'm thinking, I'm glad to know that me and my fellow soldiers are safe from the enemy, because I would not want to be exposed to what's out there beyond the walls. Further down in verse 4, you notice that the psalmist says, his truth shall be your shield and your buckler. More military imagery, right? A shield at this time would have referred to a large protective shield, something that would cover the whole body. If you can picture, if you've seen images or movies of Roman soldiers, right? They had those large shields that could basically cover the length of your whole body. So if arrows are coming, there's nothing coming through to you. But he also says that his truth is a buckler for us. That's a small defensive shield, something you can easily wield in battle and protect yourself. So God protects us in the same way that military defenses protect a soldier when he's in battle. Furthermore, the psalmist also uses animal imagery, and I think we're pretty used to this. This comes up quite a bit throughout Psalms and even in other Old Testament passages. But this idea that God protects us, he covers us with his wings, with his feathers, we find a hiding place, a place of safety. Also, you look back at verse 3, he says, "Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler," the bird catcher's trap. When he's trying to get you, when he's trying to bait you so that you fall into the snare, God says he protects you from that. Surely he will deliver you from it. Now, I love this picture of a parent bird covering his chicks with his wings from danger or from harm. Under his wings, we do find refuge from predators, from enemies, from those that are out to get us. And the Old Testament, of course, is filled with this imagery. In fact, one of the most significant examples of this is in Exodus 19 and verse 4, where God himself is describing for the nation of Israel how he led them out of Egypt in the Exodus story. And he says, "You've seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings, how I carried you like a mother bird carries her chicks, and brought you to myself." That is how God thought of and treated his chosen people, the nation of Israel. It is how he treats us today, like a mother bird caring for her young and flying them to safety. Now, this is how God protects us. God is your home security system. God is your 3-foot-thick steel door that's guarding the bank safe. God is an electrical fence that's surrounding the property and protecting it. There's nothing that can get through his defenses when he is caring for his people. And friends, Jesus shared this same truth with his disciples when he was here on earth. Again, another verse we're familiar with, John 10:28. I give my sheep eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. God is holding you so securely that there is nothing that's prying his fingers open to get you out. That's how closely he's watching over you, my friend. He guards your life, not just your eternal salvation, right? Which he says, "I give my sheep eternal life." But he's also protecting your finite mortal life here on earth. What a beautiful truth. There's another important feature of this psalm that reinforces God's protection of his people. And it's his multiple names that are used in the psalm. Now, teens, you can't answer this because we went through this in class. But adults, I want you to go through just the first couple of verses. How many names of God do you see in just the first two verses? Take a moment. Notice how often God's name is used 4 different ways. 4 different ways, right? Notice with me the 4 names, and I have them in the original for you as well, the Hebrew. The first one, verse 1, right? The dwelling place of El Elyon, the Most High. The Most High. Now, each of these names we're going to talk about here very briefly, they bear a special significance. So just like if you're familiar with Old Testament, how Jewish people thought about names, right? You didn't just name your kids something because it sounded cool or because it was unique or because it was in the baby name dictionary. You named your child something because of what it meant, right? Names were significant because of what they meant. How much more significant are the names that God's people address to him when they're referring to him? Again, the secret place of the Most High, it should make you think of a hiding place nestled high in a mountain cave somewhere, high above the ground, far from any danger. The Hebrew word here for Most High is El Elyon, and it's a name that indicates God's greatness, his loftiness above everything, above the entire created universe. Connected to this name is El Shaddai. El Shaddai, translated the Almighty in verse 1. When we face impending dangers, it is the Almighty God who fends for you, who protects you, who uses his power so that you can rest underneath his shadow and feel secure. If you can think of yourself back on the schoolyard where a bully is trying to get at you, trying to attack you, frustrating you, making fun of you, doing what bullies do, and then your big brother who works out every single day, plays on the football team, stands right in front of you with his big shadow. And there's nothing that's going to that, and there's nothing that's getting to you. No bully is going to attack you. That is God, the Almighty, standing in the way of any danger. In verse 2, the psalmist also writes that the Lord is his refuge and fortress. Lord, there is probably one of the most significant names of God, Yahweh, right? In our English Bibles, it comes in all caps. It is by no means the name that God prefers. It is not necessarily his favorite name. It is certainly not the only name we should address God with. That's what Jehovah's Witnesses would have you believe, right? That's not the case. There's plenty of names for God used throughout Scripture, and you can use all of them. I'm happy to tell you. This name that we find throughout the Old Testament, it took on a special significance in the Exodus. When God came to Moses, gave him his mission to lead Israel out of slavery, out of Egypt. And Moses is weary because the people are, they're fickle. Sometimes they're with him, sometimes they're against him. And he's very frustrated by that. And the Lord tells him, well, Moses, all you need to let the people know is that the person speaking for your behalf, the person who has your back, Moses, is the God of their fathers, Yahweh. They haven't known me by that name, but I'm telling them right now. I'm telling them as we're getting ready to start a new nation, I'm telling them here and now, they're put on notice. Yahweh is in charge, the Lord. This name, this person that Moses spoke for, Yahweh, is a name that encompasses all that God is, but especially his faithfulness to his covenants. God keeps his word. He does what he says he's going to do. Finally, the last name that God that is used for the Lord in verse 2 is God, the Hebrew name Elohim. Very common name, once again, for the Lord in Scripture, and it serves more as a title than a name. We can trust him because he's God. He's the sovereign over everything. He's the one in charge. From the beginning of the psalm, we see how faithfully our God defends his people against danger or harm. The question is, do you view him this way? Is he your first defense when you face life's challenges, or is he just a handy backup plan? You should be able to say with the psalmist, the Lord is my safe house. I trust him completely. I'm going to him first. Your life should also show that you trust him because when you have a need or you feel like you're in distress, you immediately turn to your defender, the one who can protect you. If your first reaction to a problem is to fix it yourself or to wait for someone else to come along and fix it for you, friend, I don't think you understand. I don't think you understand what it means of what the psalmist is doing here, to treat the Lord as your refuge and your fortress, to dwell in the secret place of the Most High. If you approach your problems, acknowledging God first in all of your ways, putting your trust and rest in him, then friend, he will shelter you safely and cover you in his wings of defense. Now, Psalm 91 is a beautiful passage on God's sovereign care over his people, but it is also a passage that shows us the futility of our fear. It shows you how empty the threats of fear and insecurity are in this world. When stacked up against the power and majesty of God, brothers and sisters, your fears don't stand a chance. Your insecurities cannot even compare. That's why throughout the psalm, the writer almost dismisses our fears. Now, it's not to say that God treats our fears as insignificant or that they're imaginary or something. No, our fears are very real, aren't they? These are the things that keep us up at night, that we worry about, that we're thinking about on the way to work and on the way back home. God knows that, and he's fully aware of it, especially because he was a man himself. The God-man entered into our experience of humanity, and he knows what it's like to be tempted with those fears, with those insecurities. And the significant thing about him is he did not give in to those fears. And he offers you the same kind of experience. He says you don't have to give in to those fears. You don't have to be overwhelmed or overcome by them. By God's grace, you can defeat them. Now notice starting in verse 3, how the Lord protects us from natural dangers. So there's kind of different categories of harm or dangers that come. After the psalmist admonishes us to put our faith in God's delivering care, he tells us all of the ways we can expect God to deliver. First of all, he rescues us from perilous insects. Verses 3 and verse 6 talk about that, right? The perilous pestilence. In verse 6, he tells us that we don't need to fear the pestilence that comes at night or the destruction at noonday. Another meaning of destruction is epidemic. Interesting. Further down in verse 9, the psalmist encourages us that when we treat the Lord as our refuge and hide in him, there's no plague that can come to us. Now, plague can either be talking about a sickness or an infestation. Kind of has a two-edged meaning there. Whether this word, these terms and phrases are referring to sicknesses, pests, insects, whatever, God promises his deliverance from these natural enemies, right? But just as there are natural enemies, there are also unnatural ones. Ones that are not involved in nature, ones that don't just come because we live in a fallen world, but the things that come because people are maliciously against us, opposed to us, antagonistic to us. And these also strike fear in the hearts of believers. These dangers can come from people such as, how the psalmist describes the fowler, right? The bird catcher. That's someone out to get you. Same thing in, that's in verse 3, and then same thing in verse 7. He talks about the 1,000 that may fall at your side and the 10,000 at your right hand. That's an army of people out for you, right? Out against you. Same thing with verse 5. He talks about the arrow that flies by night. That's someone aiming to get at you. They can also come from unknown sources, but they bring with them ill tidings into our lives. This would include in verse 5 when the psalmist references the terror by night. That's talking about things that petrify us, things that so overwhelm us with fear we can't even move, we can't even make a decision. It includes the evil that can befall us in verse 10. In each of these cases, there is a very real danger that's present. But God promises either to deliver us from the fear of those things or to deliver us from the fear, from the thing itself, from the enemy, from the opposition, or from the circumstances that are taking place. The comfort of the Lord's watchful care is then reinforced with God's promise to overwhelmingly defeat our enemies, overwhelmingly defeat our enemies. In verses 7 to 8, the psalmist paints a picture of a battle scene. And it's one single person, one soldier, against 1,000 and then against 10,000. Friends, those are bad odds. But God says, those 1,000 will fall. Those 10,000, they're going to fall apart right in front of you. In fact, God promised a similar thing to Joshua in his campaign against the Canaanites. And in case you're not familiar with that picture, that's Tiananmen Square in China, where one man stood down several military tanks. Pretty powerful image. And I think very much in line with what God is saying here. One person, a one man or one woman army, as it were, standing against a whole army because God is behind him. God also says that his people will watch the wicked fall by his hand. You and I will get to watch the wicked fall. This brings to mind how the children of Israel, after the Exodus, they watched as God took the waters of the Red Sea that were split in two. He had just done that miracle, and now, whoosh, they were closed in. And all the Egyptian soldiers that were still trapped in there drowned. And the Bible says in Exodus 14:30, the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And what did Israel see? What was the last image in their minds as they walked away from the shores of the Red Sea? They saw dead Egyptian bodies all over the seashore. And as it was a powerful, potent reminder, our God's in control. Our God's taking care of us. The psalmist further strengthens the safety of the heavenly shelter that we have in Christ, in the Lord, by pointing to his miraculous intervention. Sometimes the Lord directly protects his people, right? That probably happens more often than we realize. But there are other times where God uses intermediaries, shall we say. Do you know, friend, that the whole angelic host is at God's disposal? Every angel, Hebrews says, is a minister for God to us. And oftentimes, they are protecting God's people. They're protecting believers. They shield them from danger. We see this truth in the New Testament, and this psalm is depicting it as well in those very well-known verses. Verse 11, he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. Sometimes God uses these miraculous means. He gives his angels a sacred responsibility to protect us from any harmful circumstances that he has not allowed to happen. That he says, I do not want that to happen to my child. So I'm sending my angels for protection. And when the angels do their job, which they always do, your life is preserved, though you may be unaware of it. The psalmist describes it as angels carrying us in their arms above the fray, over a rocky terrain where not even your foot gets injured. No part of you is hurt or damaged. They lift us so high that we can even overcome dangerous predatory animals like lions and snakes. These animals don't stand a chance against the divine protection that is offered by the Creator to his children. Now, there are many ways we can apply this passage to our lives, I think, because there are challenges we face all the time in our lives. There are lots of things in the world that can make us afraid, lots of things that can make us feel insecure. Instead of facing military threats or dangerous animals, right? Not something you see a lot in New York City, unless you count raccoons. The dangers that you and I confront are a little more down to earth, aren't they? They're things that affect us on a daily basis. We face the threat of job loss because of downsizing at the company. We face the threat of a cancer diagnosis or another similar health crisis in our lives. We face the threat of losing our kids to the influence of their unsaved friends. We face the threat of an angry neighbor or a landlord who has it out for us. We face lots of these challenges all the time. And of course, one of our main threats is a triple threat, shall we say, that we're facing all the time. And that is the world, the flesh, and the devil, out to keep you and I from walking closely with the Lord and abiding in a loving relationship with him. If we allowed every one of these potential dangers to absorb us, to occupy our mind and our thinking, our emotions, if they consumed every waking thought, I don't think we'd ever leave the house. And at that point, you might be safe, friend, but you wouldn't be thriving, and you certainly wouldn't be doing God's will. In order to follow God's will, you must take risks. You must do the hard thing, make the tough choices, go through the trials, and endure the circumstances that are beyond your comfort zone. That's how God grows you. That's how God changes you and makes you a better person. Suffering, friend, is baked into the cake of being a disciple of Jesus. We talked about that this morning. It's part of it. And you and I have to accept that. But when we accept it, understand this. You are not throwing yourself to the wolves. You are not throwing yourself to the mercies of people that are just out to get you and circumstances beyond your control. Far from it. When you accept that suffering is a part of our life as Christians, right? Those who live godly will suffer persecution, Paul writes. when you accept that and embrace that truth and say, Lord, let it come in whatever form, when you do that, you are placing yourself directly in the hands of your defender and protector. And he's the one who's going to watch over you, just as the psalmist describes here in Psalm 91. There is no better defender for you or for your family than the Lord himself. He protects you from dangers seen and unseen, natural and unnatural. He protects you from the flying hordes of insects and also the raging epidemic. He protects you from the opposing army that's out for your blood. He protects you through the ministry, the miraculous ministry of his angels. And he gives us the grace to conquer every foe. Now, saying all of that, I do want to say this as well. There are many people who might wonder, maybe you're sitting here today wondering, is God actually promising that I'll have a life that's danger-free, that's totally safe, totally sterilized, without any problems, any challenges at all? I'll never have to suffer again? No, God is not promising that. He does not protect us from every single foe or every single evil. He defends us against many of them, whether we're aware of it or not, right? We often remain ignorant of that. But even when the health crisis comes, the job loss comes, whatever it is you fear, when that threatens your comfortable existence, God's with you. And he is managing and overseeing and sovereignly caring for you even in that circumstance, friend. That's the point of this psalm. Not that you'll never have to face danger again, but that even when the danger comes, God is still there. God is still sovereignly caring for your needs. Now, as we finish the psalm, we have the privilege of hearing from God himself. Remember the two voices, verse 1 to 13, all the psalmist speaking to you and me. He's saying, trust God like I've trusted God as a refuge, and watch how he protects you. And then in verse 14, God says, let me have a word here. I've got something to say. There's a divine word of assurance given in 14, 15, and 16. In your time of trouble, God guarantees his deliverance. He promises to put you above danger so that it cannot reach you without his permission, right? Without him allowing it. Notice a phrase, though, that comes up twice in verse 14. Because he has set his love upon me. Because he has known my name. Friend, God's promise of protection is conditional. It's not something that every one of his people enjoys. Now, let me use an illustration to help us understand this. Many of you, if you have a PC, like I do, you probably have Windows Defender on your computer, especially if you have one of the newer versions of Windows, right? 8 and 10, I think, come with Windows Defender. I'm sorry, people who use Macs, I can't help you. I don't know anything about them. But at least for PCs, Windows Defender comes with it, right? It's part of the program. It's part of the system. And it is an antivirus program, right, that you can use. However, if you wanted a stronger level of protection against potential security threats, viruses and such, then what do? You pay for an antivirus program. You pay for something a little bit better. In a similar way, God provides a base level of protection for all his children, right? Everyone who is a believer, everyone who's saved, he's watching over you. He's got your back. But there's a special level of care and attention given to those who, as he says in the psalm here, set his love on him, to those who know his name. These are the conditions for benefiting from the Lord's antivirus program, right? The system that protects you. Now, are these conditions mentioned in verse 14 talking about two separate things? What does it mean to set your love on God, to know his name? Well, I think there are earlier phrases in the psalm that might help us out and give us some context. Look back at verse 9, where the psalmist is speaking, right? This is his voice now. And he says, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you. Well, there's our phrase again. Because, since you have done this thing, now here's the result. Here's the benefit. Here's the blessing of that. Earlier in verses 2 and 3, The psalmist declares his full faith in God's protection, right? And then in verse 3, he's calling the audience to join him in trusting the Lord as a refuge and fortress, because when we do that, he delivers us. So here's the point. All these conditions are tied together. Treating the Lord as your refuge and fortress, making him your dwelling place, setting your love on him, knowing his name. It's all talking about the same thing, friend. If you want the Lord to protect you from the unseen and the unknown dangers, you have to trust him. You must have implicit faith in his goodness and his faithfulness. So, when a trial comes your way, you're not dismayed. When you receive unexpected news that might spell disaster for you and your family, you're not discouraged. You're not distraught. When you don't know the next step to take, you are not depressed. You're not worried about it. Instead, you turn to the Lord first, because he's the only one who can give you the help that you truly need. He's the only one who has watched you go through the trial that you're going through and can give you the grace to endure. So as we close here, verses 14, 15, and 16, you're exercising faith in the Lord. He's protecting you. What happens to you? What's the benefit for us? Well, there are two things that take place. First of all, our love for him grows. Your love for him grows. Now, if you think about this in the realm of relationships, it makes a lot of sense. In a marriage or even in a friendship, when you know that the other person has your back, and that's a two-way street, right? You have your back, they have your back. It's a lot easier to trust that person and to love them, isn't it? When you know that over time, as you've gotten to know that person and you appreciate them and you love them in those deeper ways, that's what we're talking about. It works the same way with God. When you've trusted him under the most difficult circumstances, your love for him increases. And that's what it's all about, friends. That's what the whole Old Testament is about, isn't it? As Jesus said, loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. On this and loving your neighbor hangs all the law and the prophets. If you want to sum up everything God has to say, it's love God and love your neighbor. The same thing happens as we rely on the Lord. When we trust God, we also gain, secondly, a greater appreciation for his reputation. We recognize his faithfulness. So first of all, he says, those who set his love upon me, right? That's what we talked about. Those who love the Lord, who trust him that way. But secondly, I will set him on high because he has known my name. Known my name. What's that referring to? Well, I think we all know God's name. So what is that talking about? Well, your name is a stand-in for your reputation, isn't it? When people think of your name, they think of what you like, what you don't like, what they know about you. I think that's the same way with God. When we think of his name, what do we think of? Do we think of a faithful, loving, merciful God? Because that's who he is, and that's what he wants to be known by. Relying on God and watching him come through for you will give you a greater knowledge of him, and it will cause you to worship him in deeper and more profound ways, friend. That's what this is talking about. Now, in verse 15, the psalmist tells us, again, it's God speaking, but the psalmist writing God, how God protects us when we trust him. So when you place yourself in his care, put yourself under his shadow, how does he fend off the enemy? How does he protect you? There are 8 blessings that are listed out here, and I want to go through them with you briefly. 8 blessings he gives us that are in store for you when you trust the Lord in this way. First of all, he delivers you, right? He says that in verse 14, therefore I will deliver him. That's actually a different word for deliver than what comes later on. We'll talk about that in just a sec. That first word, deliver, it refers to being set free, being liberated, right? So God sets you free. Secondly, he sets you on high, sets you on high. He also answers you when you call on him. That's talking about prayer, isn't it? He's with you in trouble. He delivers you. That's the second time deliver comes up. That's talking about rescuing. So again, a little different connotation, but basically the same idea. This one, more of the emphasis on rescuing. God rescues us. He also honors you. Wow, that's special. The Lord honors us when we trust him. He gives you long life, and he will show you his salvation. All of these blessings, friends, attest to God's compassionate care, his power, his faithfulness, his presence in your trials, and his absolute delight in favoring his children. He loves doing that. He loves protecting his people. There's no question about that. And we began the message today contemplating our fears. We don't like thinking about the things that keep us up at night, right? It makes us feel exposed, vulnerable, like we don't have control. But God already knows those fears. And brothers and sisters, he has a haven of rest just ready for you to come into. There is a shadow under which you can find safety and protection. There's a fortress of solitude where your fears can't enter at all. There's a place that's nestled deep, a hiding place, a secret place. It's high up in the tallest, strongest castle fortress you can imagine, far above any danger that might come your way and that no enemy can overtake. If you are not resting under this blanket of security that God gives to you, then friend, what are you resting in? Where do you find your security? What makes you sleep better at night? Is it the money that's in your bank account, in your stock portfolio? Is it your cushy job? Is it the value of your home? Is it your exceptional health? You think no health crisis is going to come my way. You think it's your powerful friends, your peers, your coworkers who accept you and they think you're so great? Those are all nice things to have, friends, but that's not where we should find our security. That's not what gives us rest and peace in this life. Instead, God's people should find security in him alone. He demands that exclusivity, where there's nothing else that we find rest in but him. As we close today, I want you to ponder the words of the writer of Hebrews. And I think no better words can be said that are relevant for us today as we consider this Old Testament truth in 2021. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. Be content, it says, with such things as you have. Can we go to the next slide, men? Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Now, in this passage, the writer is specifically talking about people who are covetous for material things, for money, right? And money, like anything else, is just a stand-in for what you find security in, right? People hoard money, they collect money because they think that gives them security. They think they're safe. They think there's nothing that can touch them because money can buy the security they need. Well, friend, whether it is money or friends or anything else that you think you can find security in, ditch it, because God says, be content with the things that you have, for he himself has said, I'm never going to leave you, and I'm never going to forsake you. When we protect our possessions with a cheap master lock that anybody can clip, God offers you a titanium steel door to watch over your life and watch over everything you have and your family, most importantly, right? Find your security in him, friend, and you're never going to be disappointed because he never forsakes his own.
Thank you for tuning in to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church. We are conveniently located in Corona, New York City, and are devoted to loving God and making disciples. For more resources and helpful information about our church, visit studygodsword.com. We'd also like to extend a personal invitation for you and your family to join us on Sundays at 9:30 in the morning for a time of interactive Bible study for young people and adults, followed by an 11 o'clock worship and preaching service. If you have young children, they will really enjoy our exciting Bible-based children's ministries in both the morning Bible study hour and worship service. If you have any questions about the church or would like to learn how to have a personal relationship with God, please give us a call or leave some feedback at studygodsword.com. We would be thrilled to meet you in person
and show you firsthand what God is doing at Faith Baptist Church. Until next time, may God richly bless you.